Y'all gotta respect the bell. Welcome back. Final segment of Crunch Time for a Wednesday. That means it is time for the Crunch Exchange. I'm going to give Steve some stories from around the world of sports. He's going to tell us if he is buying or selling the prospectus from those stories. And there's also an option for pending. The Crunch Exchange, sponsored by Gary Jordan, financial advisor with Ameriprise Financial Services. When you have the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Office is located at 2260 Oakmont Way in Eugene. Steve's literally dancing. That you can reach them at 541-484-2444. And a move that is probably several years too late, if you ask a Sea Chickens fan. The team finally fired offensive coordinator Daryl Bevel today. Of course, he is most criticized for calling the goal line pass play that led to Russell Wilson throwing a pick and losing the Super Bowl to the Patriots. But last season, Seattle couldn't really do anything offensively. Their game plan at most times seemed like it was to let Wilson drop back, run around in circles, and throw jump balls to his receivers. It worked a lot, but not enough to save Bevel's job, apparently. But is it really on him? Seattle no longer had Marshawn Lynch to rely on. His replacements kept getting hurt and were ineffective, mostly because their offensive line was terrible. And beyond Jimmy Graham and Doug Baldwin, they didn't really have anyone for Wilson to throw to. And despite all of that, Seattle finished 15th in the league in total offense. So the prospectus, firing Bevel, was a smart move for the Sea Chickens.
Yeah, I think he got a little bit scapegoated. I mean, this guy's a really good offensive mind. He's been there since 2011 with the Vikings. Before that, he actually made his bones as the quarterback coach of the Green Bay Packers with a guy named Favre. You know, I really want to think about that, because their offense struggled, but did he decimate the offensive line? Did he fail to provide this franchise with a legit caliber feature running back? So I'm gonna throw the pending one out there.
Ted, my boy, it's gonna be legend. Wait for it.
I saw a good tweet from Jeff Schwartz today that said when they fired Cable that marginal defensive linemen who get turned into offensive linemen are weeping throughout the NFL, because that's what Cable's go-to move was, turning D linemen into offensive linemen. For
marginal is a great word.
Yep. Bruce Arians retired from his job as coach of the Cardinals. All of a sudden has all of the hottest takes on earth. Not really, but he did have one scorcher fresh off the national title game. Said his good friend Nick Saban would only leave Alabama for one job, going as far to say that he covets it. And that job happens to be open right now. It's the New York Giants. Saban obviously has absolutely nothing to prove in college anymore, as he is arguably the most successful coach in the history of not only college football, but sports in general. But he still has his failure with the Dolphins hanging over his head a bit. After all, it's the highest level of football, and it is still something he hasn't conquered. So the prospectus: you buy or sell that Nick Saban would leave Alabama to coach your New York football Giants?
I'm going to sell that. I don't even think there's a chance. He makes $11.7
million
this year. The Giants are not paying Gruden money. The Raiders shouldn't be paying Gruden money. And that guy ain't taking a pay cut to get an ulcer. So sell that.
Want me to deal with Odell Beckham Jr.? Nah, it's a pass. The Titans somehow won a playoff game last week, beating the Chiefs. That's probably how, because it's the Chiefs. And that leads them into the loving embrace of a divisional round matchup with the New England Patriots and the best quarterback to ever play the game, Tom Brady. When asked about facing Brady this week, Titans safety Kevin Byard said he has a plan. He wants to make Brady look like Blake Bortles. He said Brady can't just sit back and rest on the fact that he's Tom Brady, because it's the playoffs now. This is a playoff game. I don't care if it's Joe Montana, he said. I'm trying to go out there and win the game, get a couple of picks. Byard quietly led the NFL with 8 interceptions this year, and 2 of them this year came off of Bortles, thus the reference. What say you? The prospectus: the Titans are capable of shutting down Tom Brady this week.
Yowza yikes. I like their defense. And if they could get the running game going, they could, in essence, I know this is going to sound very punny, but take the air out of the ball when they're... the Patriots are really good. They're the team to beat. They're not invincible. This isn't one of those years. The Titans could absolutely win this game, which means they could slow down Brady. I'm going to buy that.
On this date, 36 years ago, the San Francisco 49ers and the Dallas Cowboys were playing each other in famed Candlestick Park in the NFC Championship game. And with 58 seconds left in the game, Joe Montana rolled to his right, faced pressure, and floated a ball into the back of the end zone that Dwight Clark snagged out of the air to give the Niners a 28-27 win that propelled them into the history books in a run that spanned the next two decades as one of the best teams in history. You search the web for the catch, it's the first thing to come up. But is it the biggest in NFL history? Here are some more. Santonio Holmes won Pittsburgh a Super Bowl with his tightrope work. The immaculate reception turned the Steelers from a sub-500 team into a regular contender and eventual Super Bowl champion over and over again. David Tyree's catch that led to Plaxico Burress's catch. Lots of big historical catches out there. So not the best, but the prospectus, the catch is the most impactful catch in NFL history.
The one you left out, I'm surprised. Montana to Taylor.
Yeah, that's a big one.
That's a pretty big one to win a Super Bowl.
You got to pick a Niners one.
Well, here's the deal.
Nick says the catch, the TV show comes up first.
You could personalize everything for a certain fan base. For Giant fans, you know, Tyree goes to our graves with us. But there's actually one of them that's actually called the catch. It's that one. That's a bye.
The Niners do have the catch, too, by the way. It was Terrell Owens' catch against Green Bay.
From but, Steve Young, 98 yeah. playoffs.
I don't know how many people outside the 49ers fandom know that refer to that as the catch,
I too. Have never heard that.
I love it. Owens couldn't catch a thing the entire day, and then all of a sudden just catches
yeah,
that pass.
Yeah, people forget early in his career, he was Dropsy Jones.
Yep. And then cried on Mariucci's shoulder. It was fantastic. It was a good day. Jason LaCanfora wrote an interesting column today about how John Harbaugh might be on his last stand in Baltimore. Sounds odd because the Ravens Super Bowl wins feels fresh, but it really isn't. 2012 was five full seasons ago, and Harbaugh has led the Ravens to the playoffs just once since then with an overall record of 40-40 in the regular season. LaCanfora points out that they were 1-5 this year against teams with winning records, faced mostly backup quarterbacks in their wins due to injury. He said the Ravens aren't even competitive with the best teams in the league, and that Harbaugh has them in that middle-of-the-road purgatory no team wants to be stuck in, outside of the top 10 draft, but not good enough to win at all. So the prospectus, you buy or sell John Harbaugh is on his last legs in Baltimore.
Well, you know, I didn't realize that since they won the Super Bowl, that kind of
500.
That ran Tom Coughlin out of New York. I mean, and he had two Super Bowls. And you see the 2012 is now far enough in the rearview mirror that 1-10-6 season that they got in since then, they gave away at 5-5, 8-8. Yeah, they're caught in mediocrity hell. You saw they were willing to, they stuck with Brian Billick 6 years after a Super Bowl and got rid of him. So this is now third year after, fifth year after. Yeah, he's definitely in trouble. I think that's a legit story. I'm going to buy that.
Isaiah Thomas returned for Cleveland against the Blazers and helped lead them to a win. Since then, he eased himself back into the lineup for the Cavs, but the other day against the Timberwolves, got in hot water for clotheslining Andrew Wiggins as he went to the basket. Thomas got a flagrant 2 and was ejected. Also got fined $20,000 by the league today for the hit. Thomas apologized for it and said he was going for a steal. Wiggins, to his part, accepted the apology and kind of shrugged it off. But all you have to do is watch the play and see that he was not going for a steal. So why no suspension? Most of the time with flagrant 2 suspensions, they only happen when fights go along with it or there's a history of them with the players, a la Draymond Green. But this was like the Bad Boys Pistons, literally just stuck his arm out and took him down by the throat. So the prospectus, Isaiah Thomas should have been suspended.
Rick Mahorn's like, that guy's got to get 2 games.
Yeah.
I tell you the truth.
I wonder if Rick Mahorn actually got suspended by the NBA ever.
I
wonder, did they suspend people back then?
If you look at the playoff series in 89, I think, between the Pistons and the Celtics, I mean, the play by Laimbeer where he slams Bird to the floor,
tackled him.
Then Parrish punches Laimbeer. Nobody got suspended.
Nobody got a technical foul. Nobody shot free throws.
It was unbelievable. I'm buying that. He's got to get a game. That's ridiculous. And that's that in so many ways.